Our new secretary of the committee, Mr. Lopez, who calls it. I've informed the member, so we are now meeting the man. This is your secretary in this committee. Now, we are going to go to the agenda. We'll give Mr. Makubele an opportunity to take us through. You'll remember, members, that we discussed last time this nuclear policy, and we made our own views insofar as this is concerned. And comments which have been taken up here. We was just explaining to Mr. Makuela would be very much interested to get clarity on what is new than historical things we know about nuclear and stuff like that. So that's what we'd be dealing with now. In understanding the process here as this has gone through the executive and so on, and we also had our own opportunity to interact with. So without any waste of time, I'll give it to Mr. Makubele. But I did indicate to him that we are not about to sit here and go through a 31 page, as it were, on the document. We want to highlight on some of the things they think we have not seen, we have not engaged on, and we have not made opinion on to take us through.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. First of all, I'd like to apologize on behalf of the Director General, who could not be with us this morning. As the Chairperson has indicated, we bring to the Portfolio Committee the draft nuclear energy policy and strategy, which was approved by Cabinet on the 8th of August. I am accompanied this morning by Dr. Skalk Duval, who is a senior nuclear specialist at the Department of Minerals and Energy. And as the Chairperson has indicated, although we have a 14-slide presentation, I will try and focus on issues that are new because the committee had given us guidance when we drafted the policy and strategy documents, and a lot of the content that is in the policy, in the draft policy and strategy, is includes the guidance that we received from the committee. I want to just briefly go through a review of the white paper itself, not spend too much time there. And then the factors of influencing policy, perhaps I'll only touch on the latest information that we have, latest developments globally. And then the policy objectives and the policy principles. Perhaps the key interventions is where I will spend a lot of time. as well as the proposed institutional arrangements and the cross-cutting issues, a bit on the challenges and implications, because there are quite a few. Just by way of the introduction, the President in the State of the Nation address this year indicated that the government will be accelerating preparatory work that will lead to enhanced nuclear energy or enhanced reliance on nuclear energy generation. And we see this policy and strategy as part of forming part of that preparatory work that the President announced at the State of the Nation address. And nuclear power generation, as it were, needs to be underpinned, we believe, by a very clear and unambiguous policy framework. Now, if we go back to the white paper, that the members are aware of already made provision for nuclear energy. But at best, the white paper was tentative when it comes to nuclear energy. And that was informed by the conditions that were prevailing at the time, globally, and also influenced by, you know, the thinking at the time. Yes, it was 12 years at the time after, in 1998, it was 12 years after Chernobyl, and there was still some concern about nuclear energy, and there were some changes as well in political environment internationally, where there was a lot of anti-nuclear energy sentiment. We therefore felt that there was a need for a bold statement of strategic intent by government on where nuclear energy would fit in South Africa's energy mix, and hence the policy and strategy. It's aimed really at clarifying what is already contained in the energy policy white paper. Now, if we look at what has been happening and what are these factors that influence the proposed policy direction, I don't think I need to dwell on the issue of security of supply and global climate change, because we've dealt with those earlier on. But I think there is evidence, concrete, that internationally there is global resurgence of nuclear energy. Just by way of example, the Russian Federation has got an extensive program of building nuclear power plants, and they have just reorganized their nuclear industry, in fact, to focus not only on their domestic activities, but they are also focusing now on being a major industrial or international supplier. The plan there is that they are going to be building up to 30,000 megawatts of nuclear by the year 2030. And China as well has got an extensive program of nuclear power generation. The Republic of Korea, India, those are the countries that have got significant construction activity around nuclear energy. The utilities in the United States and the United Kingdom are planning construction. In fact, some announcements have already been made in the United States with long lead items being purchased, being ordered by the U.S. utilities. And we also believe that, if we look not only at where we are in 2007, but we need to be looking 20, 30, 40 years from now. What will the world be like in terms of operating experience, and particularly with baseload generation? We believe that the experience then will, largely be biased towards nuclear energy generation, as well as the supply chain. So when you're talking of supply of spares and equipment, as well as engineering support, we believe that there will be a bias less towards greenhouse gas emitting technology, but more towards nuclear energy. There is, of course, local concern about greenhouse gas emissions, and as a country, we need to respond, because there could be an impact even on the products that we produce in the country if we are a high gas emitting a country. The other factor is that, which is quite important, that I need to stress, is that there is uranium in South Africa, but not only in South Africa, in the rest of the continent. Niger, the DRC, Namibia have got quite significant resources. And we believe that the continent needs to benefit from this, not just by selling raw material, not just by selling uranium ore or uranium ore concentrate. Because if we don't do this, we will get to a situation where, for example, we have some African countries today that are endowed with crude oil, but they don't have sufficient refining capacity, because there was never a strategy deliberate to say that not only are we going to be exporting crude oil, but we are going to beneficiate this crude oil and make sure that we produce petroleum products. Now, if we do nothing about the uranium in Africa, we may find ourselves in a situation where, yes, we have the uranium ore, but we cannot use it because we don't have the necessary, we've not invested in the infrastructure to beneficiate, we've not invested in the technologies to do that. So this is something that we believe that it's a mistake that we dare not repeat with uranium. Then the other factor is the fact that there is an opportunity in South Africa. What we are saying, we are not proposing it in a vacuum. There is reinvestment in electricity generation capacity that is taking place now. It presents an opportunity. There is an opportunity for us to diversify primary energy sources. And that opportunity, allows us to actually bring in other energy carriers, and nuclear energy, therefore, is one of them. And I think I need to also indicate that this opportunity has other benefits as well, because we can start creating industries around these other primary energy sources. Then I think As the chairperson has indicated, some of the issues in terms of objectives, we had already received guidance, and these policy objectives reflect a lot of the guidance that we received, and I don't want to dwell too much on those, but just to indicate that we believe that the policy will basically set the stage for the development of a nuclear energy industry in the country. But I think the fourth bullet on that slide on policy objectives, I think is quite important, and it's something that perhaps I can say is new, because we used quite a lot the word the self-sufficiency. However, we have a goal now that we would want as a country to actually to be a global leader, not just for purposes of our own self-sufficiency. There is a space there, there is a growing nuclear energy sector globally, and we need to tap into that market. We need to position South African industries to be able to play in that space. And, there is evidence that, both in terms of our private and our public sector capability, we can play in that space, and we can play and compete globally. But what we need to do is to identify those areas where we have a competitive edge and make sure that we use those to, attain global leadership. The other issue is the last one, that we believe that, when we roll out this program, we are going to need to invest in skills. And that means investment in higher education programs, in, engineering, in science, and so on. And we believe that in itself will have spin-off outside the nuclear sector. And that could advance, actually, the intellectual capacity of the country as a whole. Now, in terms of the policy principles, the first one, I think we've indicated quite a lot, the diversification of energy sources. But the second one, a contribution to economic growth. We believe that by creating an industry around nuclear energy, we can contribute to jobs, because there is infrastructure that would have to be developed. The mining of uranium itself is proving to be a contributor to economic growth. There are jobs that are being created. Areas such as Klerksdorp, for example, there is a lot of uranium mining activity taking place there now. And there are other areas in the country that actually are going to benefit the area, for example, of Beaufort West. There is going to be new activity as a result of uranium mining activity. And that will create new jobs and contribute to economic growth. When we, roll out the infrastructure for beneficiation of uranium, that in itself will create jobs not only in the construction, but also in the operation of those facilities. The contribution to climate change mitigation, I think we've spoken about that earlier. But it's also important to note that there's always a reference when you talk about nuclear energy, there's always a reference to nuclear weapons. Now, I think it was necessary to reiterate in the policy itself that nuclear energy in South Africa will only be used for peaceful purposes and in conformity with our national as well as international legal obligations. So that is one of the principles that will guide. The other issue is that whatever takes place in the sector will be done in a manner that mitigates impact on the environment. We mustn't just mine uranium and then leave a legacy. So whatever is done, it must be done in such a way that we mitigate the impact on the environment as a result of these activities. Then, of course, I think the issue of a legal and regulatory framework is important as a policy principle. But linked to that is that we need to be looking always to best practice in our legal and regulatory framework, and not just have a framework that is outdated. It needs to keep up with the best practice internationally. And in fact, in this regard, we've already started the process of engaging other countries in the policy and strategy document to also get, because it's now a public document, to also get their views on the policy and strategy document. The document will also be submitted for comment to the International Atomic Energy Agency, just for the agency to also have a look at the policy and strategy, and perhaps they can give us some comment on the document itself. There is an unequivocal commitment that is made to nuclear and radiation safety. And actually that is accorded highest priority in the document itself. And I think that is being reiterated. What is perhaps also new is the use, is an explanation on the use of uranium in a sustainable manner. That is new. And what is new there is that we introduced the concept of recycling of uranium. And basically, that refers to reprocessing of uranium. It's nothing else but reprocessing. The reuse of recycled uranium somewhere along the you're going to have to reprocess. Now, that is something that perhaps we hadn't come out openly to say that this is an angle that would be pursued. Of course, this will be pursued, one, for peaceful purposes. Secondly, as I indicated, in conformity with our international as well as national obligations. Then we also say that we need appropriate institutional arrangements. I will spend some time on these institutional arrangements in the next slide. And then because you need to have these arrangements to have an orderly nuclear energy program. We have spent some time on the safeguards and security measures in the document. We believe that in particular the security measures, we need to have new arrangements there in order to make sure that whatever we do, we can secure the technologies, we can secure the institutions, we can secure the installations, and so on. But also, because now we are going to be going into a commercially driven program, and we would need to secure whatever patents that are, or whatever technologies that get developed in the process, to make sure that actually the South African economy benefits more from such technologies, and that they are actually safeguarded from being used by other countries. So the whole issue of security is not about just about installations, but it's also about intellectual property and innovation. Then in terms of the interventions, the scale at which the program is envisaged, I can say that that is new. We envisage there is going to be an enhanced or and a really expanded nuclear energy program in as far as generation is concerned, where, for example, we believe that we may end up with in another 15 to 20 years with more than 15% of our generation coming from nuclear energy. Then there's also investment in nuclear research and development. And basically this is something that we need to do if we are going to have a successful program. Institutions, particularly NECSA, we need to reinvest in that capacity. I think it is true that the capacity at the moment does require massive reinvestment, but of course that should be aimed at a particular outcome, and I think from our side we believe that that will also have to be faced. But the nuclear R&D is not only mainly it will be NECSA, but there are other, for example, institutions that will play a role in other areas in as far as the uranium beneficiation is concerned. Then there is the intervention in the uranium market that we propose. Now, this is something that as well perhaps some people may see it as new, but what we are saying is that the uranium that is produced in South Africa should be availed for use in the South African nuclear program, at market prices that are prevailing. But what we're saying is that there is no way that we can have a situation where we battle for uranium, to get uranium ore, when our country is actually exporting. That situation has not arisen yet, but that needs to be in a policy so that, when the need arises, that uranium is available. But also what is proposed is that in certain instances we may have to reserve some uranium and not allocate the rights, you know, in order to ensure that there is sufficient supply in future, because this is not going to be a 20-30 year activity. We are looking at here anything from, you know, between 50 and 100 years going forward, as a minimum. Then the fourth bullet is basically, one can say, new, in the sense that we are proposing that in line with government beneficiation program, uranium must also be beneficiated. And here we are particularly saying including the enrichment of uranium for peaceful purposes, I must indicate. But we cannot shy away from that. And that is because to make fuel, you need enriched uranium. And it would be better for us to actually have that capability as a country. Our first preference, of course, would be to do this with international partners. Of course, if we don't succeed in this, we would have to, you know, develop our own, you know, capability in this regard. So I think we're saying we're ready for partners, but if they don't come, then we're going to have to do the beneficiation ourselves. Now, uranium enrichment commercially is a very attractive activity. And it's something that perhaps is not well understood, but the margins, the profit margins in uranium enrichment are quite huge. But of course, you need to have invested in the technology upfront. So there is a lot of, politics around uranium enrichment, but our view is that they are primarily driven by, you know, commercial interest. Then we also are saying that we need to ring fence nuclear activities to have a dedicated focus. So, for example, when you talk skills development for nuclear energy, you need to have a program for nuclear skills development that you know is focused. You can't just say, well, there is skills development taking place generally. No. What we're saying is that there must be a dedicated one. We're saying when we say security of nuclear fuel supply, that must be a dedicated program and strategy, so that at any given stage we are sure that we will have the resources that we need for the program to succeed. Then in terms of the institutional arrangements, one of the things that has been raised when we came to the committee previously is the fact that you find that there's some sort of lack of coordination of some of the activities. So in that regard, we propose that there must be coordination of nuclear activities at executive and cabinet level, so that there is one nuclear program, a nuclear energy program. And that nuclear energy program, everything is aligned. And we believe that that alignment can best be achieved if there is coordination at cabinet level. Then the Nuclear Research, Development and Innovation Institution, mainly they were referring to, a NEXA that is recapitalized, a NEXA that has got the necessary resources to be able to carry out its research and development mandate, which is in an act of parliament. Then the Nuclear Power Generation Organization, what we are saying there is that ESCOM will be the Nuclear Power Generation Organization. However, and I think I need to stress this, that we open the door for private sector participation in the nuclear power generation sector. However, we are saying that if a private sector partner comes in, they would have to partner with ESCOM. This is something that we believe, you know, where we are now in terms of, you know, our nuclear sector, that would be the best situation, because then you have the, you know, you have the advantage of having one organization, and you can benefit from you know, centralized expertise. Then we're also saying that there must be one nuclear safety regulator that deals with nuclear and radiation matters. At the moment, you also have regulation of certain areas by other, you know, departments as well as other regulators. So we're saying that everything that has to do with the radiation and nuclear safety, there must be one organization that deals with that, those issues. Nuclear and radiation risk must be one organization. And in our view, that should be the National Nuclear Regulator. And you don't need to go to other organizations to find out what is your standard, and there must be one standard. And in fact, in terms of the NNR Act, there are, you know, there's one set of safety standards, and that safety standard is as, you know, is in accordance with the NNR Act. So what we're saying is that there must be integration, because that integration will also improve efficiency, where you don't have to repeat a process that you've gone through as a, you know, as an applicant. Also, we're saying there must be a nuclear security agency that then ensures, as I indicated, that the people, again, it talks to the issue of dedication, a dedicated focus. This agency, we don't foresee that it's going to be a public entity, as it were. But we're saying that there must be one, you know, coordination point for nuclear security. And perhaps it can be a dedicated directorate or secretariat in either safety and security, or even in the intelligence agencies and so on. But it must be dedicated to deal with issues of border control, to deal with issues of technology, you know, securing of technology, securing of installation, vetting of people that work in the sector, and you know, basically establishing the standards. Now that needs to work very closely, or be integrated closely with the safety regulator. Then then what we call an architectural capability. Now, I think this one is there may be some confusion on what we mean by that. But really what we're saying is that we need to have a South Africa incorporated nuclear incorporated, where you know that if you want to manufacture, let's say, a valve, there is either a public or a private sector institution that can do that manufacturing to the nuclear required standard. So that capability is what we're talking about. It's not one organization, but it is someone must know where to find, you know, that capability in the country. We need to develop that. And it could start, for example, that capability with an NEXA, and then you would say that for beneficiation of uranium, the first stage of beneficiation of uranium, for example, the technology right now resides with Mintec. And that's something that is not generally known, that Mintec is one of the major players that supports our mining companies when it comes to uranium ore processing. So now that needs to all come together so that you have a picture of, you know, do we have all the, you know, the bricks, as it were, to be able to construct this nuclear industry. And if you do, where are they? There are some private sector companies in this country that can do, you know, some of the most amazing things in as far as the nuclear environment is concerned. And those have to remain, you know, unknown to the general public. But I think we need to you know, create that, to know who are we going to use to attain this global leadership in this sector. Then there is the issue of the agency on radioactive waste. Now, this comes from the policy that was approved in 2005. And for this, I can just indicate that we are now finalizing a deal that is creating this waste management agency. And that bill will soon be serving before cabinet. Now that agency is the one that is going to then in the long term manage all issues of radioactive waste, particularly those that have to do with the disposal. But I think I must indicate here that we've spoken earlier about recycling of uranium and the issue of high-level waste that is usually talked about. The direction that increasingly we are going to be moving towards is the one that does the recycling of uranium. And that basically means that you know, reprocessing of used fuel is an option that we are beginning, in fact, we favor going forward, because it will then prolong the use of uranium. Then, quickly on the cross-cutting issues, we are saying, as I indicated earlier, we must secure uranium and fuel supply. There are developments nationally as well as internationally, that indicate that some countries are actually moving to consolidate their positions around uranium, and they are securing uranium for future use. Now, this is something that as well, as a country, we need to do. We've had recently a situation where a South African-based uranium company was taken over by another company, but of course that was a commercial activity. But I think we also need to be saying, what are we doing in order to enhance our own security of uranium supply, not only in South Africa but in other countries, by getting uranium resources that we can use in future for ourselves. The issue of awareness creation is important. We need to enhance this, and we're saying there must be a dedicated program to increase awareness around this program for the program to succeed. Because I think the issue is not whether the program will be done or not be done, is the issue is how best can the program be done. If you create awareness, we believe that then the apprehension perhaps can be reduced. The issue of human resource development, I think, is critical. And in this regard, I think there are some developments that we don't mention quite a lot. I mean, there are some proud achievements that we should be bragging about, but we don't do that a lot. I'm not sure why, but they are small, but in the end they are significant. I mean, and they can do wonders to our young people. The fact that we've had three years ago, a young, less than 30 person, a black woman, who got a MSc in nuclear engineering, not just physics, in nuclear engineering from Penn State, and basically created, was a trailblazer. And what has happened is that a lot of young people have then followed in that. Actually, 2 weeks ago, another 30-year-old South African defended successfully his PhD in nuclear engineering. Young, and there are quite a number of those. I'm just mentioning these. There are quite a number of them. And these are the unsung heroes and heroines, youngsters that are coming through the system. There are a number of graduates from Northwest, as well as the Northwest Coast, the Mafeking, as well as in the Porch campus, that, we don't talk about, and perhaps that's not right. We need to start talking about these young people, because they are achieving heights that need to be celebrated in this country. There is another young woman who also defended her PhD at Ohio State in nuclear engineering, and these are this is testimony to some of the efforts that our institutions are making to educate our people. The issue of environmental protection is very important, and in fact, we need to make sure that whatever we do, we don't you know, and I think the advantage here is that we are doing things in the open. There is no longer the whole issue of secrecy and so on that surrounds our program. And as such, you know, the legislation that we have in the country allows members of the public an opportunity to also make an input on how best the environment then can be protected whilst these activities are being undertaken. The employment creation I've mentioned, we've set ourselves certain goals in terms of employment creation, but these mainly will come from the mining as well as the uranium ore processing. But also in the construction of power plants, in the construction, in the manufacturing of equipment, we believe that we are also going to create quite a number of jobs there. Then the issue of funding is also important. Funding for the creation of institutions, funding to make sure that we have the right technologies, as well as funding to make sure that we have the necessary infrastructure to be able to undertake this program. Chairperson, allow me to come towards the conclusion and talk about the challenges and implications. The main challenges, I think, is the competition that we see is competition for scarce skills globally. What tends to happen, and in fact, it is something that you know, is a concern to us, is that when you have programs in the UK and perhaps in Australia, you know, being rolled out, these are English-speaking countries, and when they look for expertise, they perhaps will be looking this way, and there is evidence that they do look to some, you know, to an English-speaking country. So that is why the issue of human resource development strategy is very important, because we need to always make sure that we have a pipeline to produce people, so that if certain people are poached from this country, then we can be able to replace them. But of course, I must say that, you know, when you have a vibrant nuclear industry, such as the one that we find ourselves in, nobody wants to leave, because people want to be part of this new development. And some of the people that had left have left. They left because, you know, they didn't see much of a future. But I think now that things have changed, you are seeing a lot of people coming back. I think there are some of our people that, for example, serve at the IAEA in Vienna, who went there, who are talking to us now about, you know, returning to the country. And one of the programs we've discussed with my colleagues is what we usually refer to as Operation Buyelekhaya, you know, where we are going to say, yes, it's time you came back and contributed to this new development, was to create also, you know, a new supply chain of skills. Then the second issue is the fact that there are constraints globally in the supply chain in the nuclear sector. You find that you have to wait a long time to get certain components because there's just not enough manufacturing space, because countries are building. Indonesia has got a nuclear program. They've just had a discussion with the Koreans, you know, and a number of countries, Argentina, you know, are in discussions now with the Canadians. to restart, you know, the construction of their power plant. So you find that there is insufficient manufacturing space, sector space, basically, globally. Now, we believe that this is an opportunity for us, because we can then say, what are the things that, you know, our industry can make that can fill that gap? Because there is right now a gap, and somebody needs to step in and say that we will produce this component. And we believe it's an opportunity for our industry, and we need to wake up for this to this. I mean, the mining companies have already, they already realized that there was a gap in uranium supply. They took the gap, it's paying off. It's paying off, and I think it's for now the rest of the engineering and manufacturing industry to say, what in this nuclear value chain can we, you know, compete in as South Africa Incorporated? Then the other challenge, I think, is just to say that nuclear power is a long-term commitment. It's not something that you can say we're just doing for the next 10 years. It's at least a 100-year commitment. Because you operate a power plant for 60 years, you plan for it in another 5 to 7 years, you construct it, you then have to decommission it at the end. So it's really a long-term commitment, and we need to have the institutions, therefore, to be able to actually fulfill those obligations. I think I must say that there may be some opposition on beneficiation, particularly on enrichment. This is something that we may expect. And I believe that that opposition is mainly driven by commercial interest, because I think perhaps NEXA may touch on the profit margins, but they are quite huge in as far as the enrichment of uranium, upwards of 50%. Now, if you are in that industry, you want to protect your advantage as much as possible, and you use all manner of excuses really to try and minimize competition. Then also another challenge is then the communication of the initiative, as I indicated earlier, because if we don't communicate this properly, you know, people may draw all kinds of conclusions as to why certain things are being done. In concluding, Chairperson, honorable members, we just want to indicate that we believe that, as I think it's evident now, the era of investment in new energy, not just nuclear, energy infrastructure, is upon us. This is this generation, this you know, the epoch we're in right now, you know, is the one way we have to invest. Some people did invest in the past, and there were benefits, you know, that accrued to the economy as a result of those investments. But also now, time has come for us to invest in infrastructure that perhaps will benefit not only this, but future generations. So that era is upon us, and I think we all should feel very fortunate to be part of this exciting time. Then also, we believe that nuclear energy will form an integral part of South Africa's future diversified electricity generation mix. That is something that the policy seeks to achieve. And then the beneficiation of uranium has been identified as having huge potential, and we need to then take advantage of the growing nuclear energy market using the fact that we are endowed with the uranium resources in the country. And then there is room for private sector participation in the nuclear sector. We've even said in the policy, in the conversion of uranium, there is room for companies to enter into joint ventures with Nexa in as far as conversion is concerned, because we believe that this has worked in other countries, and it's not only the private sector, public sector that can participate in this space. I think in the past it used to be like this because mainly the programs were for other uses other than peaceful uses. Then as a last issue, we believe that the policy and strategy creates a platform on which to launch, an industry around uranium beneficiation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Makubela. I think we should try to focus on some of the areas which need further engagement. Perhaps if we may just go through them and have some additions. But what is coming out clear out of this report presentation are areas which have to do with uranium, whether from the point of view of its enrichment or beneficiation or recycling. So that's one major issue which is coming out of this. The other issue where relates to what we have raised in the past, that these issues relating to nuclear, they are scattered all over. PBMR, public enterprises, next year, so on and so forth. So, here's a proposal to some of the things that have been raised of a cabinet committee or coordinating structure at an executive level. The other area relates to issues of security of supply towards self-sufficiency and so on. There is also an emphasis on the need to reinvest the net. There is an area of awareness creation, which I think we need to further engage and probe as to what is it that it should then take. One issue which is touched but not elaborated on is the issue we discussed of the waste management, nuclear waste management. I think these are the areas, and if we can focus there without getting into the history and so on, because we've dealt with those things over a period of time. I would ask members if there are any points you think, as we picked up the input, we missed. So that if we haven't missed anything, let's confine ourselves on this and be able to make necessary intervention. Is there an issue which has been left, Smith? Or areas that have been covered? Oh, yes.
Chairperson, yes, Chairperson, my apology for a little bit late, but I'm from the Chief of Forum. But anyhow, I'm coming with nuclear. Chairperson, I would like to know that it looks like that we are not vigorously focusing on nuclear as a vehicle for empowerment in terms of educating the youth of the future of nuclear.
Amen, that we are discussing now. What we are now discussing.
No.
You are saying?
So I'm saying, Chairperson, that we need to, the department need to embark on a special program to empower the youth educationally from school level, because nuclear is one of the main energy sources of the future.
So you are not convinced that the point they've raised of awareness creation throughout the entire nuclear thing would be enough?
No.
Okay. Yes, Shrele.
Yeah, sure. I'm just to apologize. I was also in the Chief of Forum. I don't know if it has been covered at all, but just the issue around cost. I mean, there's a lot of figures that are bandied around with regards to nuclear. And I think if we could get some indication as to what the cost of a particular program is going to cost. Also in terms of the avoided cost around kilowatt hour. Because I know for new coal-fired power stations it's 25 cents a kilowatt hour. I'd be interested to hear what it is in terms of nuclear if we can get some indication.
So I don't know whether, because you said you must confine, whether this will be confining or I'll be out of her confinement, but let me just make the point. It's both on two issues actually. One on human resources. I'm also of the feeling, you know, when you listen, you hear that third world countries that are developed produce out of 1,000 about 80 engineers for every 1,000 members of the population. In fact, I hear that Korea is outshining them. Out of 1,000 members of the population, it produces 160. So if in nuclear, ultimately, we have to be competitive, we'll have to move beyond just saying a student has defended. Well, initially, that is a good thing. But we need to have tests that will show that here we are producing so many engineers, you know, in comparison with third world countries. Otherwise, if you don't produce that human capacity, we can talk about beneficiation, but you'll always depend on third world countries, because we have this raw material, we don't have the expertise to beneficiate, we end up sending it outside. So I'm just saying that, you know, at times you listen to TV and see all the pornographic things there, the crime there, the violence, and you ask ourselves, when there are so many positive and constructive things about advertising about nuclear students and so on, why don't we make sure that we use this modern facility positively and not let Hollywood movie industry dominate our society with violence, movie violence, pornography. I don't know if you also like this pornographic movies, and maybe we like them as well. The second point is on uranium. I hear that uranium is an ore, gold ore. What do we mean? Maybe explain further. In other words, where there's gold, there'll be uranium. Can there be uranium without gold in there? I'm just asking this because if we say uranium is gold ore, does it mean all the gold mines that are there have uranium? I just don't understand the relationship between gold and uranium. And can uranium exist without gold?
Thank you, sir.
Sir, I just want to make sure that you were saying that the Nuclear Security Agency must be a public entity, must not be a public entity. So now I just want to make sure how it's going to work, because you still said it must be integrated to the security of to the safety regulator, but it must be it must not be a public entity. So I just want to make sure how it's going to work, because I'm a little bit confused now.
Thanks, sir. My other question was he'll be dealing with cost. I'm very interested in the research part of it. That perhaps what role does private sector have with regard to research? Is there any kind of joint work that is being done around that? But the other question would be, because you said in terms of there is mining that is going on there in Klerksdorp, and we are busy dealing with like the proposed policy, draft policy. Currently, what is particularly around issues of safety and security? What governs all the arrangement setup that is going on? Not maybe only in case of wherever uranium is mined. Thanks.
Well, I spoke a lot about the beneficiation of uranium from its enrichment, and then, of course, it must be used. I would like to know, you see, the resulting product would be, for example, plutonium. What plans are being made to deal with the plutonium? Because you are now entering into even a more lethal kind of waste material. Also, just generally, I would like to know really what is being done at present about the waste material. Has any progress been made in finding deep level sites? What is the planning at the moment? I will leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the wonderful presentation. Especially when you spoke about the young women. I'm very happy about that. And I wish you can keep it up, because this now I can see that we are really changing. When we went to MTA education, there were only people who were aging. There were no young people there. All the people who were there were retiring. And I can see now that we are on the right foot now to have the young people. I'm saying keep it up. Congratulations to that. And also, the other question that I'm having is, since you have also added that the private sectors will be there, are we not going to see the very same thing that happens when we train our young people and we lose them out to the private sector because of money-wise wages? Are we not going to lose them out? And what plan have you put in place to keep them? Not to say, let them go first, and when they are tired there, they must come back. No, they must start with us here, serve us, and what plans are you going to put in place so that we can keep them? Because we really lose our people to other countries, especially the first world countries. The other thing again is, seeing that we are using nuclear and uranium, is Big Brother not going to come to us again like he did with Saddam Hussein and said he's got nuclear weapons, and yet we are talking about electricity? Thank you, sir.
Let's hold it there for now. We'll take this other hand noted. can we get responses and go back to the head?
Thank you, Chair. I will answer some of the questions and allow Dr. Duval to deal with the others. I think the first one is the awareness creation issue. There are programs that are being undertaken mainly by the Department of Science and Technology. One of the things that I should have mentioned is that in this program, we already have a number of departments working together. The Department of Science and Technology is championing the issue of, development of skills, particularly when it comes to recruiting and creating the awareness at schools level. They are championing that. And then NEXA is, for example, planning a science center for the youth, and which we believe that will be an attraction, because the idea is that from time to time we'll be taking students to go through that nuclear science center. So yes, we need to improve on the awareness creation. Definitely it's something that and the youth we are going to be targeting. I think that as people get to realize that not only do we need nuclear physicists, that's one of the things that people don't quite understand. We need mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, we need chemists, we need physicists, we are going to need civil engineers in numbers, geologists, because when you talk about waste, you talk about really the geosciences. And that's something that, perhaps we are not good at explaining to young people. And people, when they see nuclear, they just think of physics, and that is not the case. And certainly we'll take that and integrate it into our awareness creation programs. The issue of costs, I think at this stage what we've tended to do is to not talk too much about cost. Not because we are trying to hide anything, but because we are entering a stage where ESCOM, or we are approaching a stage where ESCOM is going to have to start negotiating with vendors. And it's quite clear that what we would expect from them is to be able to twist the vendors up in order to secure the lowest possible price for a nuclear power plant. And I think there are figures that are published about the cost of a nuclear power plant and so on. But I think at this stage, those figures, for example, that were published for Finland, they are outdated now, because the costs have gone up, and we can't generally use those figures. But in engaging with the vendors, you get an idea as to what they would go for and what they would not accept. I I really think that perhaps we can give some figures, if you allow me, Chair, on the issue of enrichment and generally what a typical plant costs and so on. We would have give those figures, but of course at the same time Nexa needs to also negotiate with suppliers. I think I would rather leave the issue of the costs and the costs for power plants and the enrichment plants to actually Nexa and Eskom to discuss that, because at this stage, fortunately, Nexa is coming to present immediately after us, so they can give that sort of whatever information they believe will not compromise the discussions that that they are engaged in at the moment. I must say yes. If we were to give a ballpark figure, I mean, if you're talking beneficiation of uranium, in our view, you are talking in excess of 15 billion rand. And that is, somewhere in that range, 15. But of course, it depends on what model do you go for. Is your partner going to come and put up a plant here? And how much of investment are they going to make? So but I think a figure between 15 and 20 billion, I think, would be at this stage for the beneficiation part. That's the figure that I can give, but I really believe that it's best left to the public entities that deal with the procurement to give those figures. Then on the engineers, perhaps we need to give at this stage a written report about the number of engineers, because the Porch campus enrolls, has got a undergraduate program in nuclear engineering as well as a master's program in nuclear engineering at the Porch campus. And there is also at the Mafeking campus, there is a master's program as well. Now, I know for a fact that on the Mafeking campus, we have no less than 9 graduates per annum. And then on the Northwest campus, the first set of students are actually graduating this year. And, those figures, I think we can provide in writing. But I believe that in a very short space of time, we've been able to have programs in the country to support the nuclear program, and already we're seeing people coming out of that. There are quite a number. I didn't talk about all the people that are studying abroad. We have people that are finishing at Manchester University this year as well. But just that all that information would need to be collated, and we can provide that, in writing. We also have the postgraduate program in radiation protection, which we do with the International Atomic Energy Agency that runs every year, exists. And that also has got the reactor physics program. Eskom has got a nuclear engineering a program that they run annually, and then there are also programs at the University of Western Cape as well. So I, if I'm allowed, we will undertake to provide a comprehensive report on skills development programs. We, you know, in writing in a short space of time. And then the issue of the gold and the uranium. In South Africa, there is a particular geological phenomenon where our gold or uranium in many instances occur geologically, you know, in close proximity with gold. But that's not necessarily the case all the time. There is an ore body in the Limpopo and the Limpopo Mpumalanga region where there is gold and coal and uranium combination. So it's not necessarily always and then the, I'm not sure to what extent now I'm talking about, I must just indicate that, yeah, in most of the cases it's been found with gold, but there are these areas, I think even Beaufort West is a case where you have the uranium, but there is not the gold that is associated with it. So, in other countries like, you know, Canada, you have uranium just, and even Australia. I think this phenomenon of gold and uranium is really more prevalent in the South African geological makeup. Then the issue of the security agency. I think it's work in progress, and because it's security also, we there is work already underway. What we've done so far is we are developing capacity within the security agencies on nuclear security. We run courses with the IAEA, where IAEA experts come and train our security, not only the security agencies, but security personnel from NEXA, from ESCOM, and PBMR, and so on. But then we involve the security agencies to create that specialized awareness. But we believe that initially we will coordinate that work to such a stage, or until such a stage where we believe that there is sufficient capacity for the programs to run on their own in these institutions. Generally, nuclear security is linked with the nuclear safety regulation. And I think at this stage, what we can undertake is that we are doing the coordination. We will continue to do the coordination, and then perhaps it may be that at the end we believe that the coordination is not sufficient, that we need to create a dedicated public entity, but we are trying to minimize the chances of that happening. We believe if we create sufficient expertise in all the relevant security agencies, then, you know, we should be able to have a structure that can do this. there are structures already that meet regularly on security matters that involve all the security agencies and the relevant public entities. And those are working quite well. But I think we need to enhance them, because now we are moving into an era where we're going to really have to protect particularly intellectual property, whereas the focus now has been protecting physical infrastructure. Dr. Duval will deal with the safety issues. Then I think he can also deal with the plan for uranium, because for plutonium, because that is a waste issue, and we do have a solution for that. The loss of people to the private sector, I think we believe that if we create enough people in the pipeline, we should be able to maintain sufficient capacity. What we've decided as a department, we've created a post that are contract posts for training of people. So those people will come in. We do recognize that we will lose them, or we may lose them after some time. But we've made ourselves into some sort of training institution. And I must say that some of the people that we took in as interns have indeed left us. But they've joined, some have joined the National Nuclear Regulator, some have joined NEXA, but of course some have joined the private sector. But we understood that this may happen. Then there were 10 posts that were created to particularly cater for training or pipeline, basically development purposes. I think what we also, in this regard, are saying is that we want the private sector to participate in the broader nuclear industrial makeup. And if they get competent people, then they will be able to compete much faster. With globally, and you know the competition is quite I must say stiff, but it can be achieved. Spain is one example of a country that has been able to move from virtually very little nuclear capability. It's now one of the key suppliers. And I think there are some comparisons between the economies of South Africa and Spain, and I think we have sufficient comfort that we really can compete in the sector. I don't think the Big Brother issue will be a concern as such, because we have signed up to all the international protocols. We also have signed up to what is referred to as the additional protocol. And the additional protocol makes provision for the IAEA to conduct international inspections and so on. And of course, the fact that South Africa was, the first country to give up its nuclear weapons program, I think that, and there is demonstrable evidence that there isn't any clandestine facility. When the IAEA comes, they go to Harmony and want to Harmony Gold, and they want to see you know, at short notice. What are you doing? They go to MINTEC, they go to NEXA, they go to all our facilities. We don't have no-go areas in our, you know, in our country for the IEA. They can go basically wherever they want to go. I think I'll leave the other questions to Dr. Zubel.
Thank you, Ted. I think the one question was, what governs safety? And I think here we must look at the legislation, namely the National Nuclear Regulation Act, Act 47 of 1999. That act establishes the National Nuclear Regulator, and its main object is the protection of persons, property, and the environment against nuclear damage. And they must do this through the implementation of safety standards and regulatory practices. Now, the safety standards have been published in South Africa, and these are comparable to international standards. The regulatory practices really means they must issue authorities to conduct those activities. Those authorities can be a nuclear installation license, or it can be a certificate of registration in the case of mining. The NNR is then responsible also to do inspections against compliance of the conditions in the certificate of registration or the nuclear installation license. The other question related to waste, plutonium waste and waste in general and deep geological disposal. The situation with waste in South Africa is that our low and intermediate level waste are well managed at this stage. We have the facilities pulpit in the Makwaland that's being managed presently by NEXA. The low and intermediate level waste are being disposed there. And after 300 years, the radioactivity in those wastes would have indicated waste. When one comes to high-level waste, this is a different situation. Some countries regard their used fuel, or the spent fuel that comes out of their reactors, as high-level radioactive waste. And they have planned for direct disposal of those wastes then in deep geological facilities. In the case of the policy that has just been presented here, we will follow a different route, or we propose to follow a different route, whereby our used fuel is not considered as waste because it will be reprocessed. In terms of reprocessing, you take out 95% of the recyclable material. Only 5% of used fuel remains. And in terms of the technology that exists, especially in France, you can take that 5% high-level waste and vitrify it in glass. Melted into glass at very high temperatures, and the object is then to contain that high-level radioactive waste for a long period. Those glass cylinders are then placed in stainless steel cylinders and stored at this stage. Obviously, most of the countries are investigating the geological disposal of high-level waste. It is safe at this stage to store high-level waste for 200 years on the surface. That also means that new technologies could be discovered in the next 200 years for different ways of managing high-level waste. In South Africa, our radioactive waste management policy makes provision for investigations into deep geological disposal. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I take note of the awareness, public awareness campaign. But there's a bit of a difference between a public awareness campaign and a public consultation program. There's a stark difference, although it sounds the same. Now, what is there any notion of a public participation program? Because after all, it serves the community. And you think of certain other communities that are either very in favor, totally opposed, or somewhere in between. And I think that needs to be done as well, somewhere along the line. I'm not sure whether the Cabinet's decision basically overrides the whole process of public participation, and if so, well, you know, it's a dangerous road to follow, but your comment on that, please. Then, the other issue is, I think one speaker did raise the issue, and that was it seems to be, and you know, I don't have a particular view on it, depending on what you say, but it seems to be one nuclear research institution you want to establish, one nuclear power generation organization, one nuclear safety regulation. Some of this makes total sense. I mean, it makes sense. But does it mean by implication that private participation in, for instance, power generation is to be included, excluded, to be welcomed, to be dissuaded? What's the view there? And then thirdly, I see this nuclear drive, which you hear for today, within the context of the wider national, if I have my acronyms correctly, Integrated Energy Planning Framework, if I've got it correctly. I'm not sure whether that document has in fact been finalized by DME. You know, it then creates a problem from an objective point of view, as you are processing or going along a road of nuclear advancement, not within within a possibility, I can't say it, but within a possibility that the integrated framework, planning framework, has not yet been finalized. If you could just update me on that, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I mean, as people were talking, I was just thinking back to a comment that was made with regards to nuclear sitting in a whole different number of different departments. Now, for instance, this discussion we're having today, it's interesting. I mean, about a month and a half ago, there were discussions with the Environment Committee around the environmental problems regarding nuclear, and none of the nuclear companies, whether it's NEXA, PBMR, EPSOM, any of those entities actually came to those public hearings. Now, I find it very interesting that we tend to have these discussions in silos. In Minerals and Energy, we have the nuclear energy people come and present to us. We don't have the debates that I've seen in the other committees. So we need to have a look at a way that we can start to actually address these concerns and start to do it in a forum like this, where we can have that kind of debate. One of the issues that was brought up, for instance, is the Bonnefontein Strait contamination and around the radiation levels that are in the Bonnefontein Strait reservoir, which is something which hasn't been brought up here and which hasn't really been discussed. And I think it's something that we need to look at. We need to look at the concerns around this entity before we start to push ahead on the big drive. The other issue, though, around the costs, I mean, you know, the fact is if we are going to push and go on a big drive of nuclear, we need to be very aware of what the costs are. We need to, as a committee, be able to decide whether these costs are justified or whether there are other technologies which we should be looking at. And I think that we can't really have a proper discussion until we actually see all of the costs that are laid out that this nuclear drive is going to cost us, and so we can weigh it up against other alternatives. So just to bring that to the attention. Thank you.
Well, let's get the responses. But the fact that you raise your views, Freyling, it means that we are discussing and debating matters. And if perhaps what the responses we're getting are not enough, we need to say that. But, you know, whenever you talk about nuclear, one very basic issue is safety. And you did touch on that. And in the draft report for public comment, it's also, you know, mentioned. I do think that we may want to come back on this matter, in the sense that what the earlier part of what the Honorable Freyling is saying is really needs all of us to think about. That you have a research arm, which is NEXA, you have a technological arm, which is MINTEC, you have PBMR, you have the regulator. In most cases, when we deal with these matters, we deal with each one of them separately. And that is something we as the committee need to correct. To have a situation with all the plans we are having, to have a situation where we get all of them together. You see? see, in NEFTA's presentation, they will say something about PBMR. You have said something about PBMR. Somebody will mention MINTEC, you did. Now, these whole, all these agencies relate to each other. There is no way that you can discuss and get to the bottom of the discussion on issues relating to nuclear with one section. Say, for instance, research section of the entire matrix. And if you do that, you are not going to get into the bottom of some of the things which have constantly been raised. Now, you would want to say something on the waste management policy, because I remember some of the points we as this committee raised on, and our concerns thereof as it regards to waste management. So it's not an issue today, but it's part of the whole program and the whole strategic focus. Would want perhaps to touch on that, but just to say that the members would remember that the Minister of Minerals and Energy came to us last year and she mentioned the whole issue of the energy summit, which has all these components. I mean, we are fresh from from another part of another area of energy mix, which is renewable, which has to do with ethanol and so on. But all these things have one aim. Whether talking renewable, whether talking energy generated from fossil fuels, all of them have to address issues of security of supply. And when that happens, there are issues we need to look into, and one of them is safety. But also, we also need to understand some of the challenges we have in terms of economic growth of the country, so on. So it's an issue of understanding what is it that we are dealing with, what is it that we are compromising or not compromising on, and you know, be at one in terms of that. Now, I think that the summit will go a long way in addressing some of the things, but even beyond the summit, it will need all of us to further engage on these matters, because there are matters affecting the entire society and which we need to, you know, deal with them in a very sober way. So we'll give Mr. Makubela an opportunity to round up and after that get Dr. Adams take us through to some of the very recent developments and challenges insofar as NEXA is concerned call it a day.
Thank you very much, Chair. Before I respond, I must just take the opportunity to say that I was made aware that the committee also went to a country that is very has got an extensive biofuels program. But what is interesting about that country is that they also have been working very hard, perhaps not making too much, you know, they've not been talking about it, but they've made significant progress in beneficiation of uranium to such an extent that today we can say that they are in the club that is that has got the technology to beneficiate uranium. And I think there must have been something that informed that decision. You know, here's a country who's got a lot of water, it's got a vibrant renewable energy program, but then decides to pursue a uranium beneficiation technology program to such an extent that they make a breakthrough and, you know, are now basically going to be commercializing that. So there is a space that they recognize and they took advantage and they now can play. But part of the challenge, Chairperson, I believe that we are not able to talk about, we've not been able to give you concrete answers on these issues, was that the absence of a, you know, a clear direction in terms of the nuclear program made some of our public entities perhaps, you know, unsure as to whether they should communicate boldly about the fact that is a view that we have, because a lot of the times they always, you know, not sure whether, you know, this is a direction that government would want to go. They didn't want to precede, for example, a policy decision, their activities. And I think now that there is clear direction on where, you know, the sector is going, I think it's high time that the sector players, you know, particularly the public entities, come out and really indicate, you know, what solutions are there to solve some of the waste problems and so on. Because we also had investigated, for example, on the waste, the reprocessing issue. But, you know, we were not, and at the time that was meant to inform the choices, the policy choices that we could propose and say, well, this is doable, this is also doable. But quite clearly to us, the whole issue of reusing uranium has always been attractive. But because of its controversial nature, it needed a, you know, an executive decision. And we believe that that executive decision, you know, at least it's in the draft, as to whether in the final document it would still be, we would hope that it would still be there in the final document following, you know, the consultation with the public. Let me address the issue of public awareness and consultation. The document has been approved now for members of the public to make comments. Now, the process is, unfolding. What has happened is it's on the website of the DME. We've made copies available. We are going to also be publishing the document in the Government Gazette. And initially, we're looking at a 60-day comment period, because we also need to recognize that there are also some commercial imperatives, number one. Secondly, there is the issue that investment in new generation has got to be made. And there are those pressures in terms of we need a new power plant baseload, you know, in the coast by 2016, 2017, and you know, decisions for construction of that have got to be taken, you know, in a short space of time. Now, the public consultation, I think we also will await, you know, also representation from people as to, if for example people believe that we should have public meetings, we'll gladly be able to actually go to the place and go and explain the policy and hear the views of the people on what they think should be done on the policy. So we remain open to do that. But of course, I think it would have to be in a coordinated and perhaps not so much open-ended.
manner in such a way that we don't just delay the policy process just, you know, by extending meetings that may not actually add new or add value to the process. So when the waste policy was released, we had public meetings. I think we will follow that route as well with this one. Particularly, I know that there are certain communities that have been or where sites have been identified that you know, may need to be, you know, there may need to be particular focus on those areas, just to explain what are the benefits of going this route, and also get people to enrich what is there, because one of the things that we don't claim to have is all the wisdom around, you know, how best to achieve these objectives. And then the private sector participation issue, I think it's there in both the beneficiation of uranium, but in the generation, we believe that that can best be achieved in partnership with ESCOM. But of course, if there are private sector players that may want to come on their own, we also have, you know, the independent power producer program that the DME is championing, and I think that would have to be discussed. But at the moment, we believe that, you know, any private sector player can approach ESCOM and perhaps partner with ESCOM in nuclear power generation. But of course, ESCOM, we believe, should be the dominant partner, or not dominant, but the majority partner in such a partnership. The issue of the integrated energy planning framework, I think, there have been events that perhaps we have not spoken about. There is the whole issue of the energy master plan. There are two master plans on energy. One deals with liquid fuels, the other one deals with electricity. The one on liquid fuels has been approved by cabinet, and there is one on electricity that is still to go there for approval. Now, to what extent that then deals with the issues around integrated energy planning, I guess, you know, one would have to await the response of the public on those documents. On energy planning, there is an approach that the department is taking, and I perhaps am not the best person to talk about that one. But what I can indicate is that the integrated energy plan, the first one that was published, that is on the website, made provision for nuclear energy, but of course, at the time, it was only talking to PDMR only. And we do recognize that, you know, it did not mention nuclear power in general. And but it was informed by the conditions at the time. But I think that perhaps I may concede here that I'm not the best person to really give a comprehensive answer on the integrated energy planning framework. Vendor funding issue, I think what I can say here is that, again, it's a nuclear
component of regulation that has identified an issue. The issue in Wonderfontein Strait is not just nuclear. The issue there is the chemical toxicity from other elements, as well as then the radioactivity. Radioactivity may not be the most hazardous substance there, but the NNR has been able to respond and, you know, identify that there is something that needs to be done there. There is an intervention that is required. I think that there is definitely an intervention that is required there. Perhaps it may not just be, because it's not as a result of, by the way, nuclear activities. It's as a result of mining. And I think at this stage, I would indicate that there is intervention that is required, and we believe that the NNR, Water Affairs, Environment and Tourism, and the DME section that deals with the environment are seized with the matter, together with the mining companies. Perhaps it may be that the NNR may need to be, with those parties, may need to actually come and give a presentation on what is happening there. Because it's clearly not related to the nuclear program. It's some of the sediments that are contaminated there are as a result of mining that took place in the 60s and 50s. So, but there is something that needs to be done in that area. I'm not sure if I've left any questions, but thank you very much.
The most important point is that this process is a consultative one, and people representing communities. There are areas we think perhaps the department must come and explain some of these things even before the process is finalized, as it is a draft process. We should actually do that and ensure that people we represent are actually, their aspirations and interests are actually taken up and registered with the department, particularly on this process. You see, your first comment, Mr. Makubela, on Brazil and stuff like that, whether it's Brazil or anywhere else in the world, what is clear is that there is no one source of energy which would be a panacea to the demands of our society, wherever we are. It can't be only from the fossil fuels. It can't only be on the renewables. So no matter how abundant water would be in Brazil, for instance, they would still need another source of energy to ensure that they meet the demands of that particular society, like in any other society, as it is at the moment, that, as correctly as they have put it, that there is an upward mobility in terms of demand and plans throughout the world as it relates to nuclear as one of the sources for it. I'm not going to go back to the reasons for that. They are well articulated here, and particularly in the aftermath of Kyoto Protocol. Thank you. Thank you so much. Can we get the last a presentation from Lexa? and perhaps to say that a particular point raised on the last one on Wonderful Day, and the fact that there's been intervention by NNR, you know, underlines the point I said earlier on, that we would need all the agencies we have. There would be specific matters, there would be matters of strategic importance, there would be activities they are involved in, there would be a point of accounting on whatever they are doing or whatever they are not doing, which I think as the committee would find opportunity to engage on that, even if it means we interfere with our program as is at the moment. Thank you so much. Remember, if you have it, you don't need it. Thank you. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for availing Nexa of an opportunity to present this morning. I'm going to deviate somewhat from the prepared script that you have in front of you because I've been asked by the chair to, given the comprehensive presentation given by the Department of Minerals and Energy, to really focus on some specifics here rather than go back over a range of strategic issues in the nuclear fuel cycle, etc., which I think were quite well covered by the DME in their presentation. So I'm going to jump around a bit, if you'd excuse me. I'm joined this morning by a team from Nexa who are able to answer a range of questions. Ms. Janneke next to me, Head of Communications. Ari van der Bijl, who's the Group Chief Engineer. Hopni Mabunda, the Company Secretary. Mashina Dayaram, reports the Chief Financial Officer, and Alan Carolison, who is Head of Nuclear Liabilities Management. I'm really going to focus on some specifics, as I've said, and look at some recent technology successes at Nexa in NPP and Telchem, to talk a little bit about our relationship with PDMR, and then to explain what we've been doing over the last few months in setting ourselves up to support the strategic priorities contained in the policy that you just heard about. So in the interest of time, I'm just going to skip pretty much to the right through the history. I won't deal with that. I'm going to be going on to really describe two of our subsidiaries in more detail. This is NTP, Radioisotopes Pty Limited, and Telchem. They are companies whose boards are appointed by the Nexa board. They report to the Nexa board. And the reason for their independent existence is to enable them to operate fairly freely in the market in certain well-defined technology areas. These two technology areas are radioisotope production and fluorochemical production. Now, you might ask, well, what do these really have to do with nuclear? Well, when the old enrichment program was discontinued in the mid-90s, we had at our disposal a whole range of highly skilled scientists and engineers and some very serious infrastructure, in particular hot cells for processing and fuel, testing and fuel, etc. And so the management at Nexa at the time said, well, let's see if we can deploy this huge technological muscle to do other things. And that's what I'm going to be explaining now in terms of what was actually achieved there. What it's done as well, like the TDMR program, is to preserve the national skill base in the nuclear domain over the past 12 years or so. So that without doing this, we would be, and you've heard a lot about skills from both from the questioners and from the DME, if we hadn't gone into these programs, we would be a lot worse off than we are today. Because, for example, in the fluorochemical area, we've managed to keep pretty much intact the entire conversion skills base at Nexa, because the technologies in that area are relatively similar to those used to convert uranium prior to its enrichment. So what is this company? The first one, NTP Radioisotopes Pty Limited. Well, what it does is it supplies world-class radiochemicals, radiopharmaceuticals, and radioisotope products largely to healthcare and life science markets, but also to industrial markets throughout the world. 3 million doses of nuclear medical isotopes are supplied by a Nexa subsidiary every year to patients throughout the world. About 100,000 of those doses are applied inside South Africa. And, you know, in a way, it's a wonderful story about swords to plowshares. The uranium that's used here came from the weapons program. What we're doing with it is turning it into doses which help people suffering from cancer, help get particular kinds of scans of bone fractures, organs, etc., that are not obtainable in any other way. Up there you've got a range of product groups. I'm not going to go into all of them, but it gives you a sense of the wide range of products that are produced by NTP. Sales revenue there, largely radiochemicals, but also radiopharmaceuticals, radiation services, etc., etc. Now, what does this mean in practice? Well, it means that we are the third biggest producer as a company of radioisotopes in the world. We export to 55 countries. And it's interesting that what this business depends on, it obviously depends on having a reactor at your disposal. We've got the Safari reactor at Telangana, in which these isotopes are made. But given the fact that they decay very quickly, in other words, you have, and the main, I'm talking now about the main isotope, which we sell, one called molybdenum-99, which is used in nuclear medicine scans, half of your product disappears within 3 days. So in other words, you get paid for what you deliver, but if half of your product is gone, it's obvious that within 3 days, it's obvious that this is a business that depends on logistics, depends on getting that product to the market as quickly as possible. And so obviously it's a business which links to rapid transport. It's also linked to having a container which is licensable in all of the countries that you see up there with South African flags stuck in them. So it's, I think, a significant triumph for South Africa in that we've managed to take that expertise and that facility, which could simply have been shut down. You could have had the nuclear experts turning into, who knows, butchers and real estate agents, whatever. But instead what happened was that they created a radioisotopes business that the country could be proud of. To move to the next platform, so just the sales for Alan, you can see that this business is growing. The performance target that we set the management last year was 12% real growth. They exceeded that. You'll see also when the annual report comes out and the financials are presented to Parliament that there was significant profit made as well. This is, I think, a business that is booming as nuclear medicine grows around the world, and it's one that we can, as a country, be proud of hosting and producing. The other large subsidiary, Telchem, we launched it, in fact, last week. And this business, the subsidiary of Nexa, is based on the expertise developed during the nuclear fuel cycle days. Those are the days even from mid-1970s to the mid-1990s. To do the nuclear fuel cycle, or particularly the conversion and enrichment stages, you need to have a very strong capability in fluorine chemistry, chemical engineering. Because that step of conversion depends on it. However, once you've developed that capability, you can deploy it in all kinds of other ways, simply because fluorine is very useful. And because it's difficult to handle, very corrosive, once you've developed that skill, you find yourself in an environment which has relatively few competitors. I mean, South Africa has the largest capacity of fluorochemicals in the Southern Hemisphere, more than Brazil, Argentina, Australia, even India. We also have the largest reserves of fluorspar in the world. Fluorspar is a rock, dig it out of the ground, dissolve it in, react it with sulfuric acid, you get something, if you look at that diagram up there called hydrogen fluoride, which is the basic chemical that is used. The hydrogen fluoride produces fluorine. Both of those are highly useful in the nuclear fuel cycle. However, you also use them in the aluminium industry. You use them in the semiconductor industry. You use them, I'm just looking for my flash, but one of the components that one makes is tungsten hexafluoride. Tungsten hexafluoride is used to deposit tungsten in wafers. I don't need it, I just wanted to wave it to show people what a flash is, what this, one of the applications is here. So there are a range of industrial products, even anesthetics for use in medical operations. We're looking at using our fluorochemicals expertise to partner a company to make anesthetics which require fluorine. So the mandate of Telchem is first of all to secure the supply of HF and F2 for the nuclear fuel cycle program that the DME presentation describes to you. That's what it's set up for, and that's its primary objective. However, once you can do that, there's a bunch of other stuff you can do as well, as I've said. And the government has been pushing the so-called fluorochemical expansion initiative based on beneficiating raw materials. As I said before, we have huge amounts of fluorspar. Mines at risk to winter north of Tshwane, near Zeerust, or south near Palabora. And so we can do far more than simply use fluorine to assist the nuclear fuel cycle. And what Telkem's job is to build a non-uranium fluorochemical portfolio into a sustainable business. Also to comply with regulatory and stakeholder requirements, and in particular to look at markets in the very lucrative semiconductor industry. There's a gas called nitrogen trifluoride, which Nexa or Telkem now, so there's some financial projections there, not as comprehensive as NTP's, because it only has been going relatively for a relatively short period of time, Telkem. Once we get on to some plants, these are some of the plants at the Nexa site in Telangaba, operated by Telkem, producing, for example, nitrogen trifluoride, which is used to clean and etch semiconductor chips used in computers, laptops, sophisticated circuitry, etc. We link up with that industry through these plants. There are some of the products have to be stored under particular conditions because of the corrosive nature of HF, and in fact any compound containing fluorine tends to be of a corrosive nature. So hence the competitive advantage that we developed in the nuclear industry transferred to use in another industry. I'm not going to go into this. I wanted to really cover those two subsidiaries and indicate the technological spin-offs that have come from investing in the nuclear industry previously. The DME has really covered a lot of this the stuff here. What I would like to get onto is to look at what Nexa's role is in some of these strategies. The National Nuclear Energy Policy and Strategy of the DME puts Nexa down as the anchor for nuclear R&D, uranium conversion, enrichment, fuel manufacture, and spent fuel reprocessing. What we've been doing since we spoke to you last is positioning Nexa very strongly to be able to play this role. We've been in almost weekly, if not daily, contact with the DME on these issues. We've done a range of technical baseline studies which would support these decisions and underpin the policy. So what has come out as a high-level strategy document has the intellectual and technical integrity of these processes, these studies of refinement, conversion, enrichment, fuel manufacture, etc., underpinning them. Also, you've heard the issue of high-tech nuclear manufacturing, and you've probably seen the National Industrial Policy of the DTI, which has been released in the last couple of weeks, mentions nuclear energy and the high-tech manufacturing that goes with it. One of the difficulties of getting into this game is that Eskom is going to be spending a lot of money on new power stations. One would like to ensure that that money, or at least some of it, a reasonable proportion of it, stays in the country. It's not simply farmed out to subcontractors overseas. To do that, obviously, you have to be able to manufacture to nuclear spec. Otherwise, the regulator won't let you build the power station because safety is primary. You can't have some backwards approach towards nuclear manufacturing is not allowed to do that. So we need to build up the capacity to be able to do this. And so what Nexa did was to go to the DME and the DST and get resources to establish a nuclear manufacturing capacity. We used to have this. We still have it to an extent, but in a sense it's run down because it wasn't used. We did try to keep it honed, but of course the specifications in nuclear manufacture are just way beyond what one requires in many other industries. And so inevitably what happened was we applied this capacity towards other industries which didn't require the high level of specification. So what the resources that we've got, particularly from the DST, will be used to do is build up that capability and to train small companies that are currently operating in South Africa to be able to manufacture to nuclear specification. One of the dangers, take the PDMR for example, one of the dangers is that those companies that are currently subcontracted for PDMR, South African companies, they may, they're trying very hard to meet their commitments currently, but it may be that you find that unless one assists them through this kind of process, those orders for the next PDMR and even for further stages of the current PDMR, those orders pass to international suppliers. And that would be a bad thing. So we're, with this money, setting up what we've called the National Nuclear Manufacturing Center, which would, for example, retain the capability to manufacture according to the various so-called ASNI codes, get back the N stamp for nuclear manufacturing, and to work with other companies, not just Nexa itself, but other companies who work in nuclear manufacturing in South Africa, to ensure that they're able to do what is required in the future, to localize the program as opposed to simply buy power stations. And then the National Research and Development Strategy of the Department of Science and Technology, a range of frontier research programs, isotope production, hydrogen economy, etc., etc., that Nexa is positioning itself with respect to. I'm not going to go into this again because the DME has covered a lot of the strategic uranium stuff in the interest of time. Get through here. But just to summarize again in terms of Nexa's positioning itself, there is an imminent global shortage of both conversion and enrichment capacity, and we're pushing to assist government in reestablishing that. Security of nuclear fuel supply is a matter of concern for any country embarking on a major build program. We need, therefore, to look carefully at conversion and enrichment. Although there's currently a global overcapacity in fuel manufacture, this can't be relied upon to continue. As you've heard from the DME, the industry will move toward a closed fuel cycle, therefore spent fuel reprocessing must be investigated. And the new generation of reactors coming online now, so-called Generation 3 reactors, the European Pressurized Water Reactor, the AP1000, the Westinghouse, etc. The next generation is so-called Generation 4, and what distinguishes Generation 4 from other reactors is the closed fuel cycle. So in other words, you, as far as is absolutely possible, nuclear fuel and the various poisons, the so-called poisons for reactors, even those will be burnt by and large in the Generation 4 reactors. And South Africa has a strong presence and has had for a long time in Generation 4. So if somebody's cell phone was picked up there, maybe mine. I mentioned the high-tech manufacturing, existing capacity in local industries stimulated by PDMR, nuclear manufacturing center, localization, and in the end we would want to manufacture selected light water reactor components under license and also the full spectrum of PDMR products. In terms of research and development, I mentioned isotope production, something we've done extremely well in Nexa. firm as doing that. Key thing emerging now is the interface between nuclear and biotech as a research area, particularly the delivery of medical isotopes to where they affect their greatest punch. That requires putting nuclear isotopes in biomolecules, and the biomolecules being tailored towards being absorbed in particular areas of the body that you want to transport the isotope to. For example, I saw one recently in the New Scientist magazine where there is an isotope transported in an adaptation of scorpion venom, which is a neurotoxin, and that neurotoxin targets the brain. It's neutralized to an extent so that it doesn't do any harm to the brain, but it takes that isotope right to the brain tumor where it acts upon it. So particularly the big Canadian company, MGS Nordion, working very actively in this area. We're Nordion's biggest competitor. If we don't start to master this area as well, our isotopes edge could well be left behind in terms of developing our isotopes edge. I mentioned the so-called Generation 4 reactors, hydrogen economy, and then also the whole area of spent fuel management, which feeds into atomic matter reprocessing. Also, another big area is so-called transmutation of radioactive waste, where the harmful so-called minor actinides in the spent fuel are transmuted into relatively more harmless isotopes. One of the things we wanted to touch on was what it's going to take to revitalize this industry. Just to put things in perspective, if you look at the expenditure in 2006 RAMs in the past, in the old program, this is not even prior to 1991, it was already falling then, you'll see that the whole investment in nuclear technology dropped significantly in real terms from 1990 onwards. This wasn't peculiar to South Africa. It dropped in Britain, for example, as well, the US as well, countries like France and Japan a lot less so. But this is really typical of a country at that stage disinvesting in a particular technology because it was felt that, wrongly as it turns out, that this was an area that we needed to move out of. As you've heard from Mr. Macabella of the DME, we're going to have to invest again. And over the next couple of years, this committee will, I imagine, be tasked to look at various budgets and MTF proposals. What we're focusing on this year is, first of all, the Pelindaba site and infrastructure projects, security, effluent, upgrading security in particular, because we believe that if we are going to go forward into the future with a strong new program, we need really to ensure that the site that we have meets the requirements. Otherwise, I think the nuclear regulator would justly call us to task wanting to put new wine in old wineskins, so to speak. So a lot of the ask is aimed at this rehabilitation. Also, the fuel cycle project that I told you about, other projects, to so-called Euro project, which enhances the uranium resources which you already have at our disposal, new R&D capacity, equipment upgrade at Safari, that's the reactor at Pelindaba, and what we wanted to do there as well is to move slightly away from only focusing on isotopes there towards fuel testing. We've had the first batch of fuel come into the reactor from PBMR to test. This is from the fuel development labs, and we're looking at also availing those facilities towards other companies, for example, Westinghouse, Areva, the French company, towards testing their fuel also in the Safari reactor. That reactor was that equipment there was originally built to support fuel testing. As I said earlier, it was then diverted towards isotopes. We need to upgrade the equipment, particularly the instrumentation, to allow Safari once again to be used in fuel testing. You don't do any of this without people. You may have noticed in the Sunday papers some adverts for Nexus staff. Nice picture taken down through overall view of the Nexus site down towards the Driftwood Dam. Nice colour picture. You're really recruiting in South Africa. We've got a large bursary program, which we've linked up with the DST. You heard Mr. Makabela talk earlier about the DST being responsible for capacity building. We're managing a bursary program in the nuclear area on their behalf, 175 odd bursars, undergrad and postgrad. We also are looking at our pensioners. We've got this project which we call the Mandala Battalion Project, getting the guys who are involved and women who are involved in the earlier program, because we don't believe that any skills can be allowed simply to go to waste. The skills around the world will be where it's at. We heard that what might happen if Australia starts up a program. If you start up a program in some country that doesn't attract South Africans, you're probably fairly safe. But there are a couple of countries that one has to watch very carefully in terms of, for various reasons, being attractive culturally to South Africa. So we really have to sit on the talent that we have, nurture it, develop it, find creative ways to push talent. It's some numbers I don't want to get to. You know, these are still in discussions. In the larger scheme of things, they're not particularly big. If you look at the the plans for an ESCOM build, these are hardly going to break the bank in that context. But they are both a capital and infrastructure nature, and also of an operational nature. We're still in discussions around the phasing of these requests. In our view, what one needs to do to get next up to speed to enable what the new strategy and policy requires of us. But obviously there's an understanding in our ranks that the company has a number of priorities, and of course one has to phase things with capacity and with what's actually doable. So again, a lot of this stuff is familiar to you from the DME presentation. We're looking at assisting and beneficiating our large reserves of uranium, having weekly conversations with the mines. We're down in AngloGold Ashanti last week, NUFCO, discussions with Uranium One. We can add value at Nexus to the uranium that South Africa mines by enriching it in order to maximize its earnings and export markets. The advantage that we have is that we've done this before. We're going to partner other countries, but we have the core of people that are aging, but they're still enthusiastic. And one has, certainly at the moment, training programs, knowledge management. We've got a knowledge management program at Nexa where one looks at what's in the heads of the 75-year-olds and manages it to a program so that knowledge is conveyed to the 25 and 35-year-olds. You've heard this, of course, we will significantly increase our nuclear power capacity over the next 20 years, provide impetus for local industry. The local mining and manufacturing industries are going to partner with local and foreign nuclear players to create the industry. Nexa needs to be rebuilt then to play a pivotal role in this program. So thank you, Chair. I'm certainly available for questions, and I hope that the two presentations together have given you some indication of what's been happening. We, of course, had plans to come after our annual report goes through to Parliament to talk to that annual report, which will more specifically indicate at a level of detail what was achieved over the last year as well.
About the R&D. I think earlier on I raised this concern because someone was like, we were saying we are, for instance, number three in terms of isotope production. And are we pleased? Because somewhere again you said the government grant the drop quite dramatically after 1994. I have noted as well that we said that there is a committee chair that is going to coordinate the work, cabinet committee that is going to coordinate this kind of work. The department has indicated as well earlier on that there's quite a number of youngsters that are coming from institutions in the Northwest, Potiskum and then in Mafeking. At the level of NEXA, have we got that kind of coordination? You know, I'm trying to say, are we happy about the number of youngsters that are coming in terms of our competitiveness? So that if the government grant went down, what is it that is being done to see? I have noted as well proposed MTF adjustment for operational funding. That maybe, because if we are lagging behind in terms of, or if we are not happy about the government grant, perhaps at some point you're coming to this committee would be to request assistance with regard to those areas like funding. But having said, I noted that there is that committee that is called coordinating from cabinet. Do we need to double R&D? What is it that, in terms of your vision, short term and long term? Because it's like, as much as you are saying, the whole work is not being coordinated, but even at the level of NEXA, I think something needs to be done, particularly because when you talk R&D, you would not deal with this matter in isolation. You'd have your awareness campaign that was raised earlier on, your education as well. That work, are you happy with the coordination that is being done at that level of the institution? Thank you.
Chair, I'd just like to make a comment, and I would not like to be misunderstood by Dr. Adams. You know, in the time of the old Department of Nuclear Energy, I mean, Stumpf tried very hard to convince people to see of this aspect of what they were doing and the exports that they were needed in the medical field. But I just look back and I say the notes I used to get, because I happened to chair for a little while, shut them down. You know, people didn't care. Let's shut all that down. But of course, some things were sold to China, you see. When I went there afterwards with the present deputy president, we saw a very successful operation of those things, including things around medical isotopes. It's not to minimize what NEXA is doing. I mean, this is a welcome aspect of it. And it's glad that it has survived, you see. But at that particular stage, I'm just amazed people from the university at UCC who sent notes to say shut them down. And Stumpf today will not talk to me because he thought I was the culprit. Anyhow, that is the comment, but I'm glad to see what is happening, that this has survived and is growing and is expressing that thought. Thank you.
Chairperson, my concern is on this the slide of radioisotopes, that one of the third in the world, where Dr. Adams said that half of this product get lost. Now, my question is, what are you doing about that? Because that is one of the most critical issues, and you need to sharpen your security on to secure that those kind of things doesn't get lost. And also, Chairperson, the security of the upgrade of the facility. I remember that one time in the newspapers, especially in Telendava, there was this issue that the fence is off and people were at risk. And therefore, that is what they say, it was a big write-up of the staff being involved and half of the staff is sick and all that kind of thing. But are you really working on this? And do you see it as a challenge, or did you already upgrade it so that we can overcome this problem? Thank you, Chairman.
Let me try to sharpen my listening skills here. Does it get lost or get used within 3 days? Is it get lost?
Just trying to combine this presentation and the first one. You know, in the first one, the point of affordability, how much is going to be cost was made. You know, just combining the two, I think for us as a committee or as a new South Africa, what is very important is that this is not going to be an easy thing. The truth is, if you really want to benefit, you're challenging old colonial regimes, because the point was that first world countries must just receive, extract our riches, and we must remain poor, depend on them, buy final product from them. And this is what we're trying to change, and we know it's not going to be an easy process. In other words, whether the costs are there, if there's a need for Africa and this nation to take a certain strategic approach towards these minerals, then we must make means and ways to find costs for them. It's not going to be easy. I mean, first world developed countries have already established big industries in beneficiation through all the colonial period that they exploited the third world of. And if we're going to say, yes, we don't have money, then it means the relationship is going to remain. And our people remain poor. Our people will suffer because we keep on saying, there's no money, we can't afford it. We have to afford it because this is fundamental in terms of the global image. Well, my big question is, now that there's this international protocol that we must all adhere to, like you said, we have stopped producing weapons, which is the right thing to do. Do countries like America also adhere to that protocol? I mean, I'm just wondering what happened to all the atomic bombs they were producing during the arms race, during the Cold War. And do you send inspectors there? There's this protocol, send inspectors to Iran, not just Iraq, but to America to go and check if weapons are still there. Because otherwise the point is that if there's no fairness and justice in the democracy that we so much speak about, then, you know, and dictatorship will remain in disguise. You're going to have certain countries, superpowers dictating to all of us, because we know they've got so many atomic bombs. Even if the United Nations wants to say, no, this is wrong, but at the back of your mind, you know, hey, this guy has got so many atomic bombs, you've got to shut up. From just saying internationally, there will not be fairness and true democracy for as long as these things are not spoken about and they are not adhered to by everybody. Thanks.
With regard to coordination, it's not perfect yet, but over the last 6 months, I've seen such an improvement that it's really extremely heartening. What one has seen is, for example, at a government level, four departments meeting regularly around the ESCOM new bill, for example, minerals and energy, public enterprises, science and technology, trade and industry, even at the ministerial level. And then at another four of foreign affairs as well. At the level of capacity building, I wouldn't say I'm happy with everything that's happening, but I'm much happier than I was a year ago. I've described the bursary program that we run on behalf of the Department of Science and Technology with 175 undergrad and postgrad bursaries on there. Mr. Macubela described bringing newly qualified black nuclear engineers back from international positions. We've also recently brought back people positioned internationally, South Africans, to programs at Nexa, also linked to universities. There's a sense in the market out there that this thing is happening. And once that starts to happen, a lot of the coordination in a way gets done by the grassroots. You find to stop getting phone calls. I got an email from South Africans at the IAEA wanting to come home. And it starts, you know, once the news is out there, it starts to happen. But I agree that one has to, at an organized course level, do a lot more. I know ESCOM has been in discussions with the University of Cape Town, Faculty of Engineering, to set up a nuclear engineering course. What they're doing there is going the easy route in that they're not putting an entirely new program down. They're taking existing modules in mechanical and chemical engineering and then onto those modules bolting on some specific nuclear ones. And so within the next year or two, you'll see a nuclear engineering course at UCT specifically linked towards the requirements of ESCOM. Now, similarly, there is a nuclear engineering course which is aimed towards manufacturing and the fuel cycle at the University of Northwest in Potchefstroom. There's the MAST program linked to the Mafeking campus at Northwest that you described. The new Nuclear Industry Association of South Africa, I understand, will get a proposal from the nuclear physics community around setting up a national nuclear physics program in much the same way that has happened around the big astronomy program, the square kilometer array, etc. There's a program centered at UCT where lecturers come from Natal and Zululand and everywhere, and they come here and they give various national courses. So it's happening. It's not happened yet. And, you know, although, I mean, any advice that one could get and any other suggestions would be most welcome. I think that we're a lot better off than we were 6 months ago, certainly a year ago. Mr. Mohammed, with respect to the isotopes, you know that program is not subsidized at the moment. It actually does make it. So, I mean, NTP is a profitable company. The plant that was sold to the Chinese is, in fact, a fuel manufacturing plant. And what has happened there is that we've turned those fuel testing facilities into an isotopes plant, and it seems that at this stage it's a good business, you know. So, and we certainly think that the faith in that program was justified. Although I must say, at the time, there was some opposition to it. You're absolutely right. I mean, I was also in a different job hearing those comments at that time. With respect to the isotopes, you know, I think there's a misunderstanding here. nothing gets lost. What happens to this product is it changes into something else. And that's the nature of nuclear physics, is that a short-lived isotope changes, I mean, whisper the word decay is whispered to me, but people often, when you say decay, they say, well, if it decays, why don't you put it in the fridge? You know, and of course you can't do that because it's a different use of the word decay. What happens is that the molybdenum 99 turns into technetium and goes at two stages. It goes from molybdenum 99 to an excited state of technetium, which is a particular version of the technetium nucleus, and the rest of it goes into technetium. And when you say it decays or it disappears, it hasn't disappeared. What happens is that it's no longer the same substance. So it changes from one, it transmutes from one substance into another. So there's no security issue there. It's physics, and you can't, it's like nature, you can't change nature. That's really what's happening from a physics perspective. The issue of the fence, I'm not quite sure what the question was there exactly. I mean, we've had no security breaches the last year or more at the fence. And we've got a very secure monitoring system currently there. There's been no incidents. And I'm also not sure what's been referred to of half of Lexus staff being sick. I haven't heard that. Possibly share through you one could refine that question because I'm not sure I'm in a position to answer it because it's not something I've heard. The issue of the question about the non-proliferation treaty and American bombers, etc. I think something that foreign affairs could answer, but it's absolutely true. The NPT is not a level playing field. There are certain countries in the NPT that are classified as weapon states, and those states are not inspected. At least their facilities for producing weapons are outside the inspection regime. It's the reason the Indians would sign. South Africa has signed and we committed towards meeting our obligations in that respect. But you're right, I mean, it's not a level playing field.
Thank you so much. As you said, we still have to look into other things and our reports and so on. We'll still further engage on these issues, but perhaps also there would be an obligation from our part to assist the process, particularly at the preparation stage, to specify the kind of areas we would very much like to be taken on board. Thank you so much. Thank you, members.